It's Success Happens on 930 WFMD, a discussion with leaders who share their pathways to success. Success Happens with your host, Jen Charlton.
Good morning and welcome, everyone. It is a lovely day here in Frederick, Maryland, mid-Maryland at WFMD. Despite the rainy weather, you know, you need rain. Rain makes things grow. It's good. Embrace the rain. Any rate, we are here and we're going to continue our conversation about the inside scoop on politics. So I thought it'd be an opportunity to look with somebody who's got extensive experience in politics and running campaigns and things like that. And I really encourage the listeners, you guys, to call in and have a conversation with us, because I want the voters to be engaged in the conversation about how do we have the political system better represent us? Because isn't that the point? And so I think so often people get resigned about it and they back out and they say, I don't want to deal with that because it's kind of a nasty business. Or people who may consider running thinking that maybe their leadership could provide some influence or direction on issues that we care about, but I don't want to put my family through that, you know? So it can be a really nasty business. And one of the things I've recognized is this idea that power is seductive. You know, power and politics go hand in hand. And what we have to guard against is the idea that it becomes more important than the issues, or it becomes more important than serving the people. When our power, our authority, our leadership becomes more important than the mission, we have seriously lost track. So this is really an opportunity for you all to engage in that process and say, okay, wait, maybe you're onto something. I've thought about running for office, but, you know, I just don't think I have the game, or I don't want to go through what it takes, or I don't know how to run for office and how do I do that. So, you know, I encourage you to call in. It's 301-694-9363, 301-694-WFMD. You can also text us to that number, and any questions that you text to us, we will address on air. So feel free to do that if you wish. So as we look at politics, you know, we're coming up on the primary season. We just had the important gubernatorial race in Pennsylvania, and so we're starting to come down the home stretch. And I think if we were to engage in the idea that our voice really does matter, wouldn't each and every one of us show up to the polls at the primary? And unfortunately, the data is not compelling around our participation, particularly in non-presidential elections. So we tend to, I think, get resigned about it, perhaps. We tend to say, well, I can't make a difference, or I'll just let them do that for me because they're my representative. And we kind of relinquish control, don't we, of our voice. And so if you have issues that matter to you, I really recommend, one, you reach out to your politician, whoever they may be, to voice those concerns, because many of them are responsive to your concerns if you let them know that. Okay. So that being said, I have some thoughts about, you know, my own candidacy when I ran, and I learned a lot. And I'll tell you, one of the things that I enjoyed about running for office was meeting the public, knocking on doors, which sounds like drudgery, right? Particularly on a day like today, where candidates probably have to be out in the rain because the primary is so close, knocking on doors and waving signs and being visible. And one of the primary reasons, by the way, people are elected is name recognition. I think it's the number one thing. So you may be a fabulous candidate. You may have tremendous leadership to bring to the table. You may be incredibly smart, but if they don't know your name, you're not likely to get elected. So you have to build that name recognition. And as a marketing person, you know, that's what I do is this idea of raising awareness and visibility. But it is definitely a different game and a different animal in running a political campaign and doing that versus running a consumer product campaign or a branding campaign, perhaps on a nonprofit event or something of that nature. So, and I think part of it, frankly, is people don't really want to help you raise visibility about a candidate. Either they won't agree with that candidate's point of view, or they don't want their business to be branded a supporter of that campaign and have it negatively impact their business. You know about the issues around some of the different businesses, Chick-fil-A, Hobby Lobby, those different businesses that took a stand on some of these issues, and they paid the price in some cases. In some cases, it also came back in a positive way, and people supported them because they were being kind of attacked for it. So, you know, as business owners, sometimes it's hard to throw our weight behind a candidate because we don't want the negative repercussions against the business. And that's unfortunate, because a business has the right to speak freedom of speech just as much as an individual, I think. So that's part of a democracy. So that being said, when we have our guest here, we'll bring him in. But I'd like to go back to what I was saying about this idea of running for politics, that, you know, meeting the people. I had one guy. I had only one nasty person in the thousands of people that I met who actually was so irritated now with all the people knocking on his doors, he slammed the door in my face. But beyond him, I had most people really excited, particularly in the far reaches of the county where people rarely, we can be very rural in some of these areas, right? So people may never see a candidate because it's in this, you know, small town or rural area, and it's not a condensed area, which, you know, when you're knocking on doors, you're trying to hit numbers. You're trying to hit as many houses as you can. So unfortunately, the rural areas sometimes get overlooked. But so, you know, I went to this one lady's house, and she's standing in the driveway, and I walked up and I introduced myself, and she was so relieved to have someone who might be able to make a difference. We weren't sure yet, right? Because I was in the primary. But somebody that would listen to what really mattered to her and what concerned her. And I was genuinely interested in her issues because I wanted to help her if I could, right? That's the nature of my way of being anyway. But so that being said, we had a nice conversation, and I met many, many wonderful people like her who really want somebody to listen to what they're dealing with. And of course, at the time, we were still coming out of the recession, and there were a lot of middle-class Americans who were, you know, middle America was really suffering, you know. We have a lot of people working in human services, you know, we have a lot of people who are suffering around us, you know. Some communities, some of the urban areas, there's a lot of folks really suffering. And some of it's they're doing, you know, if they've made choices, you know, if somebody gets involved with drugs, and you're going to hear me rant on that one now, but, you know, you get involved in drugs, you're setting yourself up to have your life be ruined. You know, just don't do it. So, you know, but in these urban areas, I was actually talking to somebody recently, and I said, gosh, you know, this heroin problem is just really horrible, an opioid epidemic, as we're calling it now. And he said, you know what, we've been dealing with it in the inner city of Baltimore for decades. And nobody was really talking about it. So unfortunately, there's been generations of people who've been struggling with this issue, and now it's really risen to this, you know, national crisis that we have. Anyway, I think what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to have some guests on with us in just a moment. And I'd like to thank our sponsors, Xerox Complete Document Solutions, Sweeties on the Creek, and Dr. Taj Karimi, and we'll be right back.
When you run a business, a lot of things can get in the way of what it is you set out to do. Replacing the couch in the lobby, finding a great deal on coffee creamers, managing all your office printing. Whoa, hold on. We can help you there. Whether you need a new multifunction printer, supplies, or some simple advice on lowering your printing cost, your local Xerox authorized sales agent can help. And we're located right in your backyard.
Visit Xerox Complete Document Solutions online at cdsxrx.com or give them a call at 301-825-9220.
When was the last time you had fresh, homemade ice cream? Sweeties on the Creek is making ice cream. We invite you to stop in and taste test our fresh-made ice cream right in the store. Or enjoy our selection of Gifford sorbets, frozen yogurts, or creamy shakes and sundaes with a great cup of coffee. Choose gifts for your favorite someone from our collection of candy sweets, treats, fashion finds for the gals, and Disney products for kids young and old. Stop in for a dessert after your next visit downtown. It's Sweeties on the Creek, just up from Market Street.
Guys, if you want to live without ED, then it's important you learn about penile implants. Here's Dr. Tosh Karimi.
If pills and injections haven't solved your difficulties in the bedroom, I want to tell you about a permanent solution from AMS Men's Health. It's a surgical implant that's completely undetectable and doesn't affect sensation.
The Penile Implant Institute of Greater Washington is a world-class destination for sexual medicine and urology for this minimally invasive surgery. To learn more, go online. It's penileimplantdc.com. That's penileimplantdc.com.
Here's Dave Ramsey with today's Ramsey Reality Check.
How many of you have driven a car that is so bad that you had to give it a name? Old Blue, the green monster. You think when you're sitting at the stoplight that everyone is staring at your trashy car. They're not. They're actually looking at their phone, checking Facebook to see who liked their last post. It's temporary. You're living like no one else so that later you can live and give like no one else.
Listen to Dave Ramsey, Saturdays from 2 to 4 on Free Talk 930 WFMD.
Win $1,000 in Fitz Cash from 930 WFMD. And it couldn't be easier. Listen each morning at 5:10 and 8:10 when Bob Miller gives you the keyword of the day. Text that word to the WFMD studio line anytime in the next 24 hours, and you could win our weekly drawing of $1,000 in merchandise from Fitzgerald Home Furnishings on 930 WFMD.
This is Jennifer Charlton with Success Happens. If you are out of the area and you'd like to listen live online, go to WFMD.com to hear our show Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. on Free Talk 930 WFMD. Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton, and I have with me today Paul Ellington, and Paul has just schlepped in the rain nasty to get with us, and I really appreciate you coming in because from out of area. And so the reason why I wanted to have Paul on, as I was saying before on air, you know, this idea that running a campaign is different than running a consumer products marketing campaign or some of the other things that I'm more accustomed to. And so I'm interested in your inside scoop on being successful in politics. But, you know, Bob, you mentioned something that I thought was interesting off air on the break about this idea that it's local.
No, people don't often think in terms of making any changes. But Tip O'Neill said many, many years ago to Ronald Reagan, all politics is local. You know, the president does things and the congressmen do things, but they're talking about hundreds of thousands of people. Right here in Frederick, you still have folks that come and knock on your front door and talk to you face to face and want to know, do you need this done? Do you need that done? And that's where you have your most influence if you're thinking about running for an office.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I did have the pleasure, and it really was an exciting thing to do. I schlepped up to Harrisburg and went to the Trump rally at the Farm Convention Center. And, you know, the pictures that they show, they're like, oh, no one's here. You know, they've tried to try that. Oh, my gosh. There was not a seat open in that house. It was electric. And, you know, you felt like you were a part of this process of raising up a presidential candidate. At the time, he had already won. But, you know, he was dealing with a lot of, you know, nasty kind of backlash. And in that room, we were all on his team. And it was just really exciting. So that was kind of like bringing the local, like your point, Bob, to bear in this massive group of people who were just all in. So welcome, Paul.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. And, you know, you and I have gotten to know each other over the last couple of cycles because of your work with Ami Hober. And I did invite Ami to call in if she wants to share something about you. I'm going to get her perspective about you.
Okay.
It's going to be all about Paul today. So you have an impressive background in terms of what you've done in politics, in not only, you know, in D.C. and state, local. So perhaps you could share with us why. Why did you get into politics? Because I think back in about 98, you stopped really focusing on business consulting as much. And you said, I'm going to do this political thing. Why?
My wife said, quit yelling at the TV, get up off the couch and do something.
Make a difference.
Exactly. That was it. I'd always been a volunteer, and I was interested. And then in 1998, it was the second gubernatorial campaign for Ellen Sauerbrey. And I was living in Bowie in Prince George's County, and I ran for office and won. I was the only Republican elected pretty much in the whole county, besides Audrey Scott, who was a county councilwoman. And then I just, in my capacity as a local elected official, I got to know Dick Bennett, who was the lieutenant governor nominee with Ellen Sauerbrey. And Dick's now a federal judge. And what he did was when we did not win the campaign, he wanted to be chairman of the party, and he asked me to be executive director. I had a decision to make, and my mom was alive at the time, and she told me, you know, you just got to, you love this, why not do it full time? And that was, 20 years ago.
And you haven't looked back?
No. And I think what's different is I started at politics with a little bit of life experience. No disrespect to young people. I have a 23-year-old daughter and another daughter who's younger than that. But I think that there's a difference when you have some life experiences to get into politics in terms of advising people. And I mean, how can you, in all seriousness, advise somebody who's in their 40s or 50s how to do things when you're 26 years old? You know, I mean,
yeah,
but
that's what
we have in politics right now, in elected politics. A lot of the campaign staffs that you'll see tend to be very young, and they're very good. They're very ambitious. They're smart. They grew up
very
with the
committed.
Internet. Very committed. But I think having the life experiences makes a difference.
I get that, because I never cared about politics in my 20s. All I cared about was me. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that was me. I'm not saying that all young people are that way, but that's how I was. And, you know, my career, my ambition, what I wanted, you know, how I looked, how I felt, you know, all that stuff was all focused on me. And it wasn't until I was probably in my 40s where I started to get this idea of volunteerism.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm impressed by the young people who volunteer, because God bless them. They're out there early and young learning to be of service, which is very important, because it stops having it be about me.
Right.
And I'm now focused on something else that's bigger than me. But that being said, this life experience thing, I mean, I think I'm so much better equipped to help people today because I've had my own bumps and bruises.
True. And as you encounter, most of the people that tend to volunteer are very passionate, and they need to be treated with respect, because the key is no campaign can be successful without its volunteer component. And that's a big component. You know, a national campaign with the president's a perfect example. I mean, that, you know, he struck a nerve and he connected with people. But it was the people on the ground, you went to the events, and the people that just absolutely positively believed, because the president got outspent, you know, probably 3-1 at least. But it was the passion that he kindled in people. And then the volunteers right here in Maryland. I mean, we didn't win, but Maryland was fortunate. We had an event in Hagerstown, and we had another event over on the Eastern Shore in Ocean City.
With the president. Yeah, that's unprecedented, really.
We haven't had a president during a campaign in Maryland in 2 years since... Oh, I wouldn't even want to venture a guess, because Maryland's always been considered, you know, in the Democrat column. So it really wasn't competitive. I mean,
it was kind of, why spend your energy there?
Right. But what he was doing, he was strategic. I mean, he wanted to cover all his bases. But as you can, you know, Hagerstown's close to West Virginia and it's close to Pennsylvania. Ocean City, you could
get. And people drove for hours to see these things.
It was amazing. It was amazing.
Yeah, it gives me goosebumps talking about it, because my dad went to the one in Hagerstown. He said it was absolutely amazing.
It was incredible.
In the hangar, I think it was.
It was up there at the airport.
Yeah. So, you know, I think this idea that what he accomplished, when you said struck a nerve, as somebody who runs campaigns, how do you get your campaign and your candidate to strike a nerve?
Well, part of it is there the president, you know, he saw the changes in America, and it's not foreign to Frederick or Hagerstown or beyond in Western Maryland, and that's what we call the forgotten Marylanders. People that, you know, in Annapolis and in Washington, the predominant Democrat government only covers the Baltimore-Washington corridor. And so you have to just basically talk to people as you would, you know, talk to anyone else about what concerns them, and not talk so much at them, but talk with them, listen to them and reflect their concerns. I mean, if you truly want to represent people in Congress or the House of Delegates, state senate, or wherever, you first must have compassion and you first must be able to relate to them. Too often people, and we see it in, you know, honestly, on the Democrat side, I mean, some people are shopping for a congressional seat, you know, and I think some people.
But I have to say, I see that on both sides.
Well, I was going to say some people characterized Ami as that 2 years ago, but she's committed to being really involved in, you know, in the ensuing period of time. She's never given up, and she's continued to get to know her district, and I
Absolutely.
Think that's to her credit.
And by the way, has helped people get work. I mean, when I think it was the Volvo plant that changed, one of those large employers. Reduce their workforce, and she was helping people find work. And I mean, she really cares. And I struggle sometimes because I know so many politicians at this point, probably more than right. I want to admit. But and on both sides, I mean, I know both sides. And the one thing I say is, if somebody's running for office, there's something really big they're committed to, because you don't do this unless you really are into it. You know, it's just too hard, frankly. But and it's expensive. You have to put some of your own time, energy, and money into it to make it successful. But when you look at these candidates, so often I think they start to lose their way. It's kind of like, as a business or an organization, we have a mission statement, we have a vision statement, we're very crystal clear about what we're up to. And then sometimes you have that thing called mission creep, right? Where you get off mission. Well, much like that, I think candidates lose sight of, and then politicians, once they're elected, what was my point here? Why did I decide to do this? Because it becomes about power, politics, and getting reelected. And that is not the mission.
Right. Well, that's the thing. It's a fine line maintained, especially the further away you are from home. I mean, for, you know, a lot of members of Congress, they have to live here and visit their district on the weekends. So you do tend to lose sight and lose contact. The perfect example was, people remember Eric Cantor, you know, the majority leader lost his primary. And on the primary day, he was in Washington basically going about business as usual. He didn't even see it coming. And because that's a perfect example of losing touch with your district to the point where you don't even realize you're about to lose. And so you've got to
That was a shocking outcome. That one was shocking.
It was. You've not only got to be confident, but not confident, but connected. Mm-hmm. But you have to like the president, in my opinion. I keep going back to the president because I think the president was really in tune with the electorate. And you have to listen. You don't have to always talk to people. You talk with them and you try to reflect. And this is a diverse district here. I mean, it goes from Montgomery County, the suburbs of Washington, D.C., all the way out to Garrett
County. Ridiculous.
And it is ridiculous.
I hope they fix this gerrymandering because it doesn't serve the people.
Well, that's why it's so critical for not only the governor to be elected, but we need to elect a Republican senator here in District 3 because we have to protect the governor's veto power. Because if he's truly going to have gerrymandering, but if he's going to take care of the gerrymandering and have true redistricting that's reflective of us, he has to have a veto-proof majority because, unfortunately, the Senate could veto the governor's plan.
Well, I think the numbers are 5 senators, 7 delegates or
Correct.
Something that we have to make sure we bring in to mm-hmm. have – And here's my thing. You know, I have a lot of Democrats who are friends. Mm-hmm. I have a lot. I've been a musician all my life. I don't know many Republican musicians, okay?
Right.
So, and, you know, I work in human services. We're probably way outnumbered in terms of Republicans in human services work. So, you know, I'm around a lot of Democrats, and I get along great with them. Frankly, they've become really good friends, many of them. And we're able to talk politics without – hating each other. So, you know, I think that there's an opportunity to find that balance in Annapolis that has been so wanting. So on that, we're going to take a quick break. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Xerox Complete Document Solutions, Sweeties on the Creek, Dr. Taj Karimi, an amazing urologist. And we're going to go to news and weather. We'll be right back.
Past editions of this program are available in the audio vault at WFMD.com.
Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton, and I have with me today Paul Ellington. And Paul is an extraordinary campaign, really, you know, consultant, but also obviously campaign manager. You've worked on a lot of campaigns. 50 campaigns?
Correct, yeah.
Wow. And across the country?
Pretty much in Maryland, although I did work in Mississippi some, but that was when I was with GOPAC mostly.
So tell us about GOPAC. Mm-hmm. What was GOPAC? What is GOPAC? Tell us about it.
GOPAC was founded back, you know, it's common belief prior to this administration that in order to win, you had to have some type of a PAC or you had to have some type of organization. And Pete DuPont, who used to be governor of Delaware, founded GOPAC. And GOPAC was really the first 527, which is what that means is it was an advocacy group, you know, that people could donate money and they could support candidates. And they did this across the country, GOPAC. And the whole goal was to find candidates at the state and local level and elevate them up and maybe prepare them to run for federal office, whether it be Congress or Senate, and some statewide offices. And, you know, when we lost the election with Bob Ehrlich and Michael Steele, I was chief of staff to Michael Steele, and I wanted to maintain his viability at a national level. So I found GOPAC, and we were able to have Michael become the chairman, and we were able to turn it around. And GOPAC's, wow, they've been around for 40 years.
Well, I have to say a shout out to Lieutenant Governor Michael Steele. I adore him. I think he is fabulous. I told him, I said, when are you going to run for Senate?
Mm-hmm. We used to be on the Central Committee together in Prince George's County. That's how far back.
Oh, my. Yeah, he's fabulous. So when we look at this idea of inside politics, what do you look for in a successful candidate?
Well, first off, they have to have, as we talked about in earlier, they have to have a commitment to not just win, but they have to have a commitment to do what's necessary, take some direction, know what you don't know. And the main thing is you need to want to engage people and want to make a difference. And I think that comes through to people. I think that, you know, when you look at successful campaigns, like let's look at Governor Hogan. Governor Hogan started, you know, and it was funny because we were in the Ehrlich administration together, and both of us, lost with the governor in 2006.
You're talking about Governor Hogan now.
Right. Yeah. He was Secretary of Appointments. But we stayed together, and that's when we started Change Maryland. We were just driving around, and we had an idea that we needed something to offset the O'Malley administration, the tax cuts, to speak for the people. And that's what, Larry Hogan basically started out with, was common sense approach to budgets, to taxation, the fact that Maryland could not continue down that road, and it just morphed into a movement. And that's my point is that he found
it got traction.
He got traction. And he toyed with the idea in 2010 of running. And then Bob Ehrlich decided he wanted to do it. So I can't say that we didn't start the group without that in mind. Fortunately for us and unfortunately for Bob Ehrlich is Ehrlich decided to run in 2010, which left Hogan in 2014 for an open seat, which was the best possible way.
It all turned out.
It turned out great. But the point is that, you know, he struck a nerve. He was articulating, much like the president, what people were thinking, what they were feeling, what they were experiencing. And I think that's what makes you have to have that common bond.
But to know that you're articulating what people are thinking and feeling, you also have to have the conversations.
Right.
To ask them.
Exactly. You can't assume that you know, and that's a fool's errand. If you think that you're going to tell the people what they want to hear and you're going to bless them with your presence, sometimes that's the approach too, but it's not the right
one. It's not. I don't think it can't build to the energy that Governor Hogan has or that President Trump has. It can only be fleeting. In other words, it might work for a minute, but I don't think it gets you that massive struck a nerve kind of impact.
Right.
Because it's not authentic.
Not at all. It used to be, you know, before we had all this instant social media, that people made events. You know what I mean? It's like you had to make events, you had to stage them. But now with the access to the internet and the social media, and you go to the events and you're with the people. Case in point was yesterday, Ami and I were driving the back roads of Frederick and Washington County, and personally looking at with the elected officials, especially Washington County, of the devastation of this rain. And, you know, the fact of the matter is there wasn't any press there, but there were people there. And
they were in it. They were feeling it.
Right. And there were elected officials. And Ami went because she cared. She went to learn about it and to, you know, so she could experience it with the commissioners, with the town council and the mayors and the people, the regular people. And it wasn't grandstanding. Like I said, it wasn't a press event, but it was an event to get out there and just experience what the citizens, your constituents, your future constituents are experiencing, and try to advocate for them. But most importantly, try to show that you have empathy and that you can relate to what they're experiencing. And I think that comes across. It's not a sales job. It's just to show people I genuinely care. I'm doing this for the right reasons. And, you know, I hope that in the future we can work together when there are better times.
Well, and this brings me to my point, because I look at Ami. Ami's a great example. And everybody listening to this show knows that I endorse Ami. I mean, I think the woman is amazing. And I know her heart and her commitment to making a difference for the people. And that's what I hear about. I'm not interested in politicians who are interested in themselves above the people. I'm interested in somebody who's there to work side by side with the people. And she is that. But that being said, when you look at what it takes to have a bipartisan support of an individual, you know, Hogan's got about 70%?
Yes.
I think that hopefully with the success that Trump has, perhaps people will let go of the animosity and start to really recognize his achievements, that his ratings are increasing and improving. But you'd really have to give up the animosity to accept his success, right?
And some people never will.
And some people never will. But, you know, that's that 30%. So and I look at Sheriff Jenkins, love Chuck, shout out to Chuck. But, you know, he gets about 70%.
Right.
So how do you have somebody like Ami, who's in this wacky district that goes from rural to metropolitan, and all the people have different needs and wants and concerns, to get to 60, 70% approval? Because she is the kind of candidate who could.
Right. Well, what you have to have is anybody that commits to running for Congress has to commit to two terms. Just a fact. I mean, because the odds are that you won't win the first time, especially if you did like Ami. You know, she took it on in an odd year. What I mean by an odd year is, one, it was presidential. Two, she's running against an incumbent, and three, the district is
a mess.
Gerrymandered. It's a mess. Exactly. But she got a lot of good experience. She got a lot of good exposure, and she was able, because she fully immersed herself in the campaign. You know, she's not, I mean, she has a consulting business, but she was a full-time candidate. And not everybody has that luxury, you know, because people just can't immerse themselves in their campaign. She was fortunate enough to do it, and her experience were one that she liked, and that she liked the people. She found that she had a genuine passion for this. And I think that, you know, she lost November 2016, but she didn't miss a beat. Took a few weeks off, but then got right back in the swing of things. And I think that's the recency. The people need to see you, because, you know,
they want to know you really mean it.
Right. And the visits and the frequency of the member of Congress coming to your district drops off the further west you get. I mean, I'll be honest, most of them don't go beyond Frederick, because their vote model in the Democrat side in particular says, well, I have to get Montgomery County, I get Frederick County, the rest don't matter. And people realize that. And that's not what you want in a member of Congress. Each and every, and every situation it's critical to those people. They have to know that their member of Congress is tuned into what they're facing and cares about them. And like I said yesterday, that was an example, but it's just one of many.
Yeah. And I think about this idea of reaching out to people in a rural district, it really is challenging because you start to feel disconnected from the process. And I really love that she gets in the car and really drives to these places and shakes hands and meets people and lets them know that she cares. Yeah. It's a big deal.
Well, this is the fact that Frederick's an example. Frederick's kind of a microcosm of the district because you have your urban, your cosmopolitan, your city, and then not too far away is rural America, you know, with agriculture, with carnivals, with volunteer fire companies. And so imagine that on a district-wide basis, which is what we have. And, fortunately, it only takes 3 hours to drive across the district, but, we're able to get out to Western Maryland a couple times a week. But Frederick is kind of, if I had to say it, it's more or less the ground zero, you know, and it's a neat little miniature version of the entire district.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's a nice way to put it. Now, let me ask you this. How important is it when you're looking at being hired by somebody for a candidate or for a campaign, rather? How important is it that you align with their politics? I mean, do you always agree on every point?
No. In fact, it was funny because I was with President Trump the minute he came down the escalator. And, so I was an early Trump supporter. And, another issue was term limits in Montgomery County and things like that, where initially I don't think Ami, and I'm just speaking about her, had the same views that I did. Eventually, I think we kind of merged. But, no, I think what matters is you don't want a yes man. You want somebody that you have confidence in. Because what I do is most of my stuff is the communication side, understanding the grassroots, understanding the electorate, and understanding which way the winds are blowing. And I think that's what people really need. And I'm not being dismissive here, but anybody can work a spreadsheet. Anybody can figure out how many signs get out. But I think if you have somebody that understands the trends, understands the electorate. I've been fortunate. I grew up in Maryland. I've grown up in this political environment. And coming from Prince George's County, it was toxic before anybody knew what toxic was. I mean, they don't want to just beat you in Prince George's County. They want to end your political career once and for all. And, now we've seen that elevated to the national level. So I think from my perspective, I can only address, I've had the experience at the local level, statewide with Governor Ehrlich and Governor Hogan, and the congressional level. My first congressional race was 1986, and that was another situation where you found a good candidate, a good person. I learned early when I was just on the lower rung of watching the dynamics between the campaign manager, the consultants. They did not agree. But once you hit the door, everybody was on the same team.
Well, and I think we don't do that well as the GOP on occasion. I mean, I'm just going to speak to the elephant in the room, which is we've been pretty divided up here. And I've addressed it with several of our leadership and candidates and elected officials and said, look, we got to be on the same team.
You have to be
rowing the same direction.
Especially this year.
And we don't have to always agree.
No.
I mean, there's plenty of people that I don't always agree with. But the nastiness and the backstabbing needs to cut out.
Right. Well, this year in particular, as anybody will tell you that on either side, it's all about turning out the vote. And the governor's vote is disproportionately outside the Baltimore-Washington corridor. He needs maximum numbers from Frederick. He needs maximum numbers from every county where the Republican Party is strong. And ironically, everybody looks at Maryland such a sea of blue, but 17 of the 24 jurisdictions are controlled by Republicans. We need those 17 to frankly outperform. If they perform up to our expectations, the governor will win. But if they could outperform, we could get those five senators that we need.
Well, and I think this goes back to participate. We just need to participate. We're going to go on a quick break, and we'll bring you back in. So we have with us today Paul Ellington, who's campaign manager for Ami Hober, but he's an extraordinary, experienced leader in politics, and we really appreciate you being here and giving us the inside scoop. You are listening to Success Happens. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Xerox Complete Document Solutions, Sweeties on the Creek, and Dr. Taj Karimi, and we'll be right back.
When was the last time you had fresh, homemade ice cream? Sweeties on the Creek is making ice cream. We invite you to stop in and taste test our fresh-made ice cream right in the store. Or enjoy our selection of Giffert sorbets, frozen yogurts, or creamy shakes and sundaes with a great cup of coffee. Choose gifts for your favorite someone from our collection of candy sweets, treats, fashion finds for the gals, and Disney products for kids young and old. Stop in for a dessert after your next visit downtown. It's Sweeties on the Creek, just up from Market Street.
When you run a business, a lot of things can get in the way of what it is you set out to do. Replacing the couch in the lobby, finding a great deal on coffee creamers, managing all your office printing. Whoa, hold on. We can help you there. Whether you need a new multifunction printer, supplies, or some simple advice on lowering your printing cost, your local Xerox authorized sales agent can help. And we're located right in your backyard.
Visit Xerox Complete Document Solutions online at cdsxrx.com or give them a call at 301-825-825. 9220.
Guys, if you want to live without ED, then it's important you learn about penile implants. Here's Dr. Taj Karimi.
If pills and injections haven't solved your difficulties in the bedroom, I want to tell you about a permanent solution from AMS Men's Health. It is important that you and your partner learn about penile implants and its tremendous impact on your self-esteem.
The Penile Implant Institute of Greater Washington is a world-class destination for sexual medicine and urology. To learn more, go online. It's penileimplantdc.com. That's penileimplantdc.com. DC.com.
It's all about your car. Call in with questions to Dave Serio beginning in less than 30 minutes right here on 930 WFMD.
Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton, and I have with me today Paul Ellington. And if you'd like to call in and make any comments or questions, 301-694-9363, 301-694-WFMD. You're also welcome to text us, and we'll take your comments or questions that way. So, Paul, one of the things that I've been intrigued by is the difference between running a campaign and the marketing of that versus products. And maybe it's not different, but I want to look at this with you. The data thing, how to understand a district and how to win it. So somebody made a comment to me, who's a Republican, said, Ami can't win. The numbers aren't there. It's a D6 or a D8 or whatever the heck it is, because the way they gerrymandered, screwed up the whole district. By the way, that's just nastiness. They just need to cut that out. But that being said, how do you then have people? And by the way, I think there are a lot of Democrats who would vote for her, right? It's not, I think she has somebody who, like I said, can get that 70% approval rating. But how do you win it in a district when the data doesn't support it?
I wouldn't say the data doesn't support it. I would say initially the voter registration numbers may not support it. And what I mean by that is that to pure numbers, if that were the case, then, like I said, Larry Hogan would have never won. But he would have never even run. You have to see a path to victory. And what we have is, as you talked about initially, data. Data indicates that there are voters that will respond to certain messages, and that's why Governor Hogan's been successful at Maryland and why President Trump has been successful nationally. And that we, you hear about all these things with Facebook and stuff like that. But, the bottom line is that we do have the ability to target our voters. We know exactly who we have to touch, who we have to touch, how many times, with what issues, and how we have to compel them to vote. And a lot of it's just in 2018, it's going to be a referendum on Larry Hogan. And we believe Larry Hogan, Governor Hogan, has done a good job. And Ami is an ally, an advocate. The governor supports her campaign. And it'll be the Hogan-Hober team. And that's what we're hoping. Yeah, there's a certain amount of coattails, but also it's a coordinated campaign. In other words, we're doing in Western
Maryland.
You all
are aligned in your vision for what you want to bring to Maryland.
And our efforts to get the vote out.
Right.
Because the governor has to focus on other areas. I mean, he's focusing on Frederick, don't get me wrong, because of the Senate race and the numbers he needs. But he needs a strong ally in Ami Hober that will be here on a day-to-day basis and expending resources to get that vote out.
And when you say the Senate race, that's the one with Senator Ron Young?
Yes.
And my dear bud, Craig Giangrande, who I absolutely am endorsing right. in that race. He's awesome.
Well, we do have a primary, so yeah. we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
and,
well.
And we need an excellent...
Well, let me say, I'm going to say this about Craig. Craig's a businessman.
Yeah.
And I want business people. Mm-hmm. I want people who understand how to run things for success and
right.
profit.
Right.
Because, you know... If you can do that, then you can be sensible in Annapolis.
Certainly. Well, on the campaign side and the data side, it doesn't replace being here. And you know we can target you and hit you with messages as much as we want to, but until that connection is made with you and the candidate in some capacity, all that's could be for naught. And As we were talking about earlier, it's door knocking, and it's just not in Frederick. We door knock district wide. You just see people's faces when you roll up to a farm, and they're like, first off, I'm not here to do anything other than to meet you for you know, political purposes because we're running for office. And people are pleased with that. I mean, even though you're running for Congress, people still want to have a relationship. So all the data in the world would not be effective if people didn't have a genuine bond and a genuine belief in you as a candidate.
Well, and I've said often, from the moment I met Ami, and I'm using her as the example, but it could be Craig. Same thing with Craig. We need Ami in Congress. See, we think one thing voters, I think, forget, or maybe we as campaign people stress too much emphasis on, I'm here to represent this district. It's way bigger than the district. The vote that Ami, and by the way, the experience that she brings from having been at the Pentagon and, you know, all the generals who endorse her and all of that support and connectedness that she has is important for the nation. It's not just important for that district because she brings that wealth of knowledge and experience and vote to that body.
Right. Well, what happens is the experience is one thing, but it, you know, people can talk about Democrat, Republican. The bottom line is you don't get anything done in Washington unless you're a member of the majority, and it helps to be a member of the president's party. So, I mean, if people really want to make a statement, they can make a statement. If they want to make a practical, educated, personally advantageous decision, then they should honestly vote for a Republican because that's who's going to deliver. And it's going to take federal dollars to fix 270 and the I-70 interchange and places like that. It's also going to take federal dollars to help the county executive with some of this flooding because this is an infrastructure problem. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it'll happen again. And that's what I said. Where are our federal officials on this? I don't think the senator or a congressman, well, our congressman's now out in Iowa running for president, but I haven't seen, if I'm a federal official, I'm going to be touring because what Ami and I saw was devastation. We saw roads wiped out. We saw people struggling, you know, homes underwater. Where's our federal representation? Because, you know, the county executive here and the Washington County commissioners have declared a state of an emergency and we have not seen a federal presence. You can't blame the president. I mean, if your own senator and your own congressman.
Yeah, they got to show up.
Yeah, because that's who takes your message to Washington and to the administration saying, my people need help. And that's not happening here. And that's what I'm saying. That's where, you know, I believe that Ami will make a difference because she cares.
And that's, you know, that brings us back to my original premise. You got to be focused on the mission. You can't be focused on you. And your politicking and your personal benefit of running for office. You really have to stay focused on why you're there, and you're there for the people.
But you're also there to represent the people, but not just say, I'm against Donald Trump. I mean, too often we're on this grandiose mission to go after the president. People don't want that. People look at, you said it initially, politics is local. Well, what they want is, I don't mean to say this with any disrespect to Congress, but they want a glorified city councilman. They want somebody that'll help them with the Social Security check, help them with, you know, these crowded roads and help them basically represent them in Washington.
Well, people are out there. They're suffering. They're struggling. They're trying to make their lives work. They have families that have lots of issues that they're concerned with. And we need to know that the people who are representing us at the local, the state, and the national level care about us.
Right.
that we're more important than their reelection.
One of the most popular senators we had is Barbara Mikulski, because Barbara was everywhere.
She was everywhere. And